you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at laist.com/sweeps.
Great to have you with us on Film Week. I'm Larry Mantle, joined by film critics Tim Cogshell of Alt Film Guide and Cinegods.com, Leah Lowenstein, and Charles Solomon, film critic for Animation Scoop and Animation Magazine. Coming up later this hour, we're going to talk about some of the best mom roles on screen over the history of film. But we begin with Life of the Party, a comedy that co-stars Melissa McCarthy and Maya Rudolph. Ben Falcone is the director and co-screenwriter with Melissa McCarthy. Leah, let's start with you. What'd you think of Life of the Party?
So I know Tim's going to disagree with me, and I know that a lot of other critics are going to disagree with me, but I kind of liked Life of the Party. Yes, it's kind of edges have been rubbed off a little too much, and Melissa McCarthy really is better when she's kind of at her sort of most coarse, most ridiculous, most kind of obnoxious self, as she was in, let's say, Bridesmaids or Spy. In this case, she's in a movie directed by her husband Ben Falcone, who has a cameo in the film as well, and I think the two have great chemistry. Tim is going to dispute that. But this is perhaps my daughter's recurring nightmare, by the way, is that I will decide to go to college and
recurring nightmare.
Exactly.
Well, it's not to interrupt. I'm sorry. This sounds like the Rodney Dangerfield.
Yeah.
It's not completely original, of course, but it gives McCarthy some nice moments to sort of do what she does well. And there's, you know, some good mother-daughter jokes. It's, yeah, okay, all right, Tim. What?
Hold on. Let her finish.
Why do you hate this movie?
Yeah, I wish you could see Tim. He's like ready to pounce.
Why do you hate this movie?
And I don't hate it. As a matter of fact, I like this movie every time I've seen it. I liked it in 1986 when Rodney Dangerfield made it with Keith Gordon.
What was it called? Back to
Back
School?
Back to School. Mm-hmm. It was really neat. Sally Kellerman, a neat movie. Liked it then. Liked it in an episode of Different World when Patti LaBelle went to school with Dwayne Wayne. It was the same episode.
Well, who wouldn't want Patti LaBelle to go to school with you? Yeah.
And it's always a cute premise. Sure it is. The problem that I have, really, it's only this. When Miss McCarthy works with her husband, she slips into doing these little routines, right? So we go into a scene, and the scene really degradates very quickly into her doing a routine. Bouncing off of this, they're either second city or improv. One of the improv groups.
There's clearly
groups
some improv
from.
Going on.
And frankly, when she gets with the other improvers in the film, and they're riffing. And this is great, except that nobody's actually doing a scene. There's not actually anything going on.
This happens a lot in Ben Stiller films. Like the movie grinds to a halt, and something happens for a few minutes that's sort of not relevant, and then the movie goes back
into the story after the routine is over.
I think it depends on who's handling it. If she's in a, let's say, a Paul Feig movie, such as Bridesmaids, he worked with Judd Apatow a lot, and they come from that whole school of improv and just letting the camera keep rolling and then deciding later, you know, what to use and what not to. In that case, you can get some really great stuff. You're right to a point, Tim, that there's some stuff that goes on a little too long.
What Paul knows how to do is to say no to various different actors, or maybe that happens in post. I don't know when but here, Ben is in love with Melissa. And I don't blame him. That's
well,
his wife.
Isn't?
Exactly. And he never says no. And some of those are a no.
Isn't that an editing issue then? Really?
Yeah.
I think this movie is pretty entertaining and it's good for some laughs. I mean, if you want an alternative kind of Mother's Day movie, that's this one.
All right?
It's not so bad.
All right. And it's The Groundlings here in Los Angeles. Melissa McCarthy and Ben Falcone were part of the film Life of the Party, the comedy in wide release. It's rated PG-13. The mystery suspense Breaking In stars Gabrielle Union, Billy Burke, and Adjiani Alexis. James McTeague is the director and Ryan Engel, the screenwriter. Tim?
Yeah, James McTeague directed V for Vendetta back in the day. I like this movie every time I've seen it, too. I liked it when it was called Die Hard. I liked it when it was called Panic Room. This one sort of squishes those two together a little bit and sets it in a black family. It's kind of neat, though. It's neat, even though that it is terrible in all of the ways that these movies have to be terrible. But you have here this mom whose father did some dastardly thing. Her father did some dastardly thing. So now her children are in jeopardy in this grand house out in the middle of nowhere that her father owns. Some men want something that's in that house. They get her children, just like you see in the commercials. But you know what? You shouldn't have took that black mom's children. That was a bad idea. Bad, bad idea.
Especially Mother's Day weekend.
Oh, Mother's Day weekend. Are you kidding me? That's going to turn out badly for pretty much everybody except the children and the mom. And you know this as you're watching the movie. So it all really just becomes about how much fun is this? How is she just going to kill all of these guys? Because she
is. And you know that going
oh, sure
in?
Sure you do. Sure you do. There's one guy who's the criminal mastermind kind of guy, although he's not a mastermind because she's smarter than he is. Then you have the sociopath guy, the sort of psychotic sociopath guy. Then you have the kind of reluctant, goofy guy doesn't really want to hurt anybody, you know, but that kind of guy. And then you have the guy that you know is going to die in the first 5 minutes of the movie. And it's laid out as schematically as you can possibly see. I sat there. I enjoyed the entire thing. Way to go. Gabrielle Union, who is a producer on this film. Along with Mr. McTeague. Good stuff. A lot of fun.
All right. Breaking In. But it sounds like not intentionally
no,
so.
No, it's ludicrous.
All right. Breaking In, starring Gabrielle Union, James McTeague, directing. It's rated PG-13 in wide release. The Japanese animated feature Lou Over the Wall is directed and co-written by Masaki Yuasa. And is the film voiced in Japanese?
No,
or
it's dubbed.
It is dubbed.
Yeah.
What'd you think, Charles?
Well, Yuasa is a very interesting figure. He made two films last year, which is kind of amazing to direct two animated features in 12 months. And this one won the Cristal for Best Animated Feature at Annecy, you know, the most prestigious of the animation festivals. It is, however, he's one of the leaders of what's called the alternate anime scene or alternative anime scene. So it's not like a conventional Japanese film and completely unlike an American animated feature. You have Kai, a sulky junior high kid, is there another kind, who's taken to this little fly-speck town, fishing village, when after his parents' divorce. And although he's a talented musician, they pretty much have to dragoon him into joining the band that the two people he's the closest to being friends with do, a very spunky girl named Yuho and the exuberant Kunio. And as they begin to play in an abandoned amusement park, they attract the attention of the title character, who's a mermaid. But when she hears music, her tail splits into feet and legs so she can dance. And when she starts dancing, anyone near her has to join in. You can't stop yourself from the movements. It's a little too complicated in places. It obviously owes a lot to, you know, Anderson's The Little Mermaid, Disney's The Little Mermaid, and Miyazaki's Ponyo on the Cliff by the Sea. But it's very much his own thing. And if you're willing to go with all the twists and turns, it's just very, very different, very unusual, and rather entertaining.
And the quality of the animation?
Not great. It's done in Flash, which I think was one reason they were able to do it so quickly. So the characters are fairly minimal in their designs. And in some of the sequences, like when they're dancing, this isn't someone really trying to capture the essence of a dance movement. Their legs are just flailing about and they've got a big smile and they seem to be having a good time, but it's not like Snow White dancing with the dwarves or Belle waltzing with their transport with Beast. You know, it's not that anything approaching that level.
Can you describe a little more what Flash is?
Yeah, boy. It's
didn't mean to upset
I'm
you.
I'm not the techie in this family. it's a program that people use. Probably the best known use for it for most of the listeners would be the Simon's Cat films. Simon Tofield felt he needed to learn Flash for the commercials he was doing in England. And so he did the first one, Kathmandu. And it's a way of doing animation. You use drawings. You know, you draw on a Wacom tablet. But it doesn't necessarily allow you for the kind of new – it doesn't support the kind of nuanced things that some of the more elaborate programs that, you know, say Disney uses now, or DreamWorks, or the big studios, those very lush, lavish features. But it enables you to work quickly and relatively inexpensively. And in the hands of a talented director or artist, it can be very striking. And I noticed, you know, Lael's surprised Sound of Glee out Simon's Cat, which are brilliantly animated, but very, very minimal.
The thing about Flash is a lot of the blocks of information are already pre-designed. So what you're doing is you're putting together blocks of information, right? And you can tweak them this way or that, but you know, so it's like,
but you're not starting from scratch.
You don't start from scratch, which is why you can go faster, so much faster. But you can't tweak it endlessly, and the amount of personal
that kind of nuance, yeah, that we think of in really, you know, the high level animation from Ghibli or the Western studios, but
or children drawing with a crayon,
yes. But it's, opinion. You know, it can be used effectively.
And you mentioned alternative anime. Does it have its own conventions already, or is it just sort of what makes it alternative is it doesn't use anime conventions?
I think it seems to be much more the latter, because while this film is more structured than the other one he made last year, The Night is Short, Walk On, Girl, which is just fragments and feels like Yellow Submarine went to Japan for the vacation. They don't seem to have their own conventions yet. It seems to be a pretty new sorry, I'm a little allergic today. It seems to be a very new movement of young, kind of offbeat artists who are finding a path in the current market and, you know, working through the web and, in this case, studios, but not the bigger, higher-end kinds of things.
Lou, Over the Wall is the Japanese animated film we're talking about. It's rated PG from Masaki Yuasa. You can see it at the Edwards Irvine Spectrum in IMAX and the Lemley's NoHo in North Hollywood. The Desert Bride is an Argentinian drama starring Paulina Garcia and Claudio Ricci. The film is co-written and directed by Cecilia Tan and Valeria Pivato. It's a directorial debut for both of them. Leo, what'd you think of The Desert Bride?
Oh, Larry, I really, really heartily recommend this film. It is a beautiful, understated piece of work. It's the story of a woman who has been a housekeeper, essentially a live-in maid for a family for many years, and the family decides to move on, and she's released after her long service and doesn't know what she's going to do with herself. She finds another job in another town many, many miles away and has to take a bus to go there. This is a woman who's never been out of this family's home, essentially. She has been made their family her family. It's reminiscent also of the Brazilian film, The Second Mother. And along with that film, it reminds me of Central Station, where there's a gorgeous performance by Fernanda Montenegro, also about a woman who has sort of kept her life very circumscribed and is beginning to branch out. So Paulina Garcia, who was in a wonderful film called Gloria a few years ago, is venturing out on her own. She is on a bus. The bus breaks down. Like a tornado comes along. She finds a street market. She is momentarily intrigued with the idea of trying on a dress. She goes into this guy's van. Nothing bad happens. She just forgets her suitcase and then spends the rest of the movie trying to find her bag. That leads to a bunch of sort of quirky, unexpected connections. It's a little bit reminiscent also of like a Jim Jarmusch film in some ways, early Jarmusch. It's just, there's something very delightful and understated about it. I also loved the choice, the directorial choice, to keep the camera at a distance from the characters. Typically, there's these sort of dolly or like tracking shots where you'll see that she is just sort of limited by her circumstances, by her surroundings. And then gradually, as we get to know her better and she begins to open up, the camera gets closer to her, reveals more of her face, not just the surroundings.
Paulina Garcia, Gloria, in which she plays a very, very different character than in this film. This sort of ebullient woman exploding with life and energy.
Nothing like this character.
The people around her can't keep up with her. Here, she takes it and she ties it all in. It's so, so powerful. The expanse of this area, too, is beautiful in the film. Really, really just a gorgeous, beautiful meditation.
Yeah.
On life. That's all it really is.
And she's stuck in the desert, sort of Argentina.
Yeah. Doesn't this sound like the kind of film that so many American actresses would love to be cast in and to really have this kind of space to really develop a character. And yet, you know, there's so few films that offer this kind of opportunity.
Give the character time to think.
Mm. Yeah.
And the audience, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. If there's any casting agents or producers out there that are listening, I sure hope they'll consider doing something like this.
The Desert Bride is the film. It's an Argentinian drama. You can see it at Lemley's Playhouse Pasadena and Lemley's Royal in West Los Angeles. The film is unrated. We have a lot more to come with Lael, Tim, and Charles, including a new adaptation of Chekhov's The Seagull, starring Saoirse Ronan, Elizabeth Moss, and Annette Bening. That's to come on Film Week. It's Film Week on 89.3 KPCC. Delighted to have you with us. Our critics are Charles Solomon, Lael Lowenstein, and Tim Cogshell. Next up, the Chekhov play adapted to film The Seagull, starring Saoirse Ronan, Elizabeth Moss, Annette Bening. Michael Mayer is the director, and Stephen Karam did the adaptation of the Chekhov play. Tim, what do you think of The Seagull?
I thoroughly enjoy this movie.
What a cast.
Saoirse, who you know, I admit my ridiculous crush on. Annette Bening, who I had a crush on for almost 35 years now. Just wonderful actresses owning this material, along with a really great performance by the great Brian Dennehy and Corey Stahl. So good work happening all around in this Chekhov, which is set contemporary to the play, 1895. If I may, I'm going to read something that Chekhov wrote just before, as he was finishing. I'm paraphrasing because it's Chekhov and, you know, lots of words. I am writing the play. I am writing it not without pleasure. It's a comedy. There's a great deal of conversation about literature, little action, lots of love. Describes this movie exactly 100-plus years ago. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful film. Saoirse Ronan just absolutely breaks your heart. She has to do a thing in this movie where she has to act very badly. There's this symbologist playwright, Constantine, who's the son of Irina, and he's written a symbolized play. And she has to be in this moment, and she has to just be really awful. And she is. She's terrible, which of course means she's really good. And then later in this play, there is a scene where she must break your heart, broke me in half and walked away. I just love that. And it's Chekhov, so what are you going to do? Slow, as much concerned as with the environment and the landscape as it is anything else that's going on. But it's just really good.
Ronan is really, to me, developing as one of our most versatile actors. I mean, she just, the range that she has is phenomenal.
Yeah, I completely concur. From Brooklyn, from...
Atonement.
Atonement, yeah. Just, it's... Of course, Lady Bird. Just she has
totally
no limits. I think she has
pretty
much no limits.
This is also material Annette Bening knows really well. I saw her in The Cherry Orchard at the Taper not too long ago, a couple of years ago, and I heard her on Terry Gross on
KPCC, she's on this
of course,
week, yeah,
talking about doing The Seagull as a young girl at the conservatory when she was just a student. So it's perfect material.
Sounds great. The Seagull, high endorsement from Tim. It's at the Arclight Hollywood, the Landmark in West L.A. It's rated PG-13. The British film The Escape stars Gemma Arterton and Dominic Cooper. Dominic Savage is the writer-director. Lael?
So if Tully struck a chord with mothers and audiences last week, I would say that... The Escape is kind of like almost striking a whole symphony or a movement there. It goes dark. It's the story of a mom in England who is really challenged. She's just sort of at her wit's end dealing with a husband who's not very present, three kids, a very full plate. She's just sort of at her boiling point, gets very little support, and is struggling. What distinguishes this film, I have to say, is the performance by Gemma Arterton. She is an actress who's been around in a bunch of not great movies, big movies, but not great movies. Quantum of Solace, Prince of Persia, Clash of the Titans, right? Like big studio movies that didn't do that well or didn't, just should have been better, let's say. She is a remarkable actress who gives this very internal performance where you can constantly see the just what's going through her head. You can feel her pain. You can feel that this woman is grasping for air and just trying to find a way out. She makes a decision, which I won't reveal, in the course of the film that takes things in a direction which is perhaps unpopular, but it makes complete sense given the context of the film. And I really endorse her performance, and actually Dominic Cooper, known particularly well as the loving husband in Mamma Mia and other films, is very good in this as well. It's very well directed. Dominic Savage, who did it, is an actor who actually had a part in Barry Lyndon, I believe, yeah. So long ago.
Bullington. He played Bullington.
Yeah, right.
He was Barry Lyndon's son.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not known so much as a director. He did a film called Love and Hate, but this film, really excellent. It's very dark, but it feels very authentic.
Tim? Yeah, I concur, and particularly about Gemma, because the film mostly lives with her. There's a sequence of this film. The film is called The Escape, so, you know, she wanders away, and we're with her, and we just wander around with her. Around Paris,
mm-hmm.
And it's just—it's almost verite, and it's just so wonderful and so beautiful, and we just spend our time with her, and we see her become a completely different human being, which mm-hmm. she doesn't have that guy, her husband,
mm-hmm.
and we spend a lot of time looking at her eyes, the camera pointing at her eyes. He's talking, kids are screaming, things are going on. She's just sitting there, and we're looking at her eyes, and the movie is in her eyes.
Mm.
You can see how she's broken. So it's a beautiful film. Mm.
The Escape is the film, the British drama starring Gemma Arterton. It's written and directed by Dominic Savage. It's unrated. Lemley's Monica Film Center, Santa Monica. The documentary Hitler's Hollywood is from Germany. Rüdiger Zuckland is the director of the doc. Charles?
Well, I mean, when we think Americans think of German film after Weimar, I think we assume that all died because, you know, Lubitsch and Billy Wilder and Marlene Dietrich and everyone left. And there was, in fact, a thriving cinema industry under Goebbels that I don't think very many people have seen examples of. And these are films you've never seen before. Some of them very bizarre. Some of them look interesting. The two problems I had with this film is, one, it's very dry. It's like listening to a two-hour lecture with these visuals going on in the background that are more interesting. And two, his premise is this was all escapism for people who were unhappy. And I don't know that in the late 30s that most German audiences were unhappy. They had elected Hitler. The country was doing better, for some people anyway. So I don't know that it was, I don't know that the thesis of it holds, but it's fascinating material that, again, if you are interested at all in film history, you probably didn't know it existed.
Yeah, I had no sense of this, Tim.
Yeah, a lot of it is revelatory, explaining, like Charles says, a lecture. Did you know? And then they show you. And I'm like, wow, no, did not know that. A lot of it's the work of Lenny and the propagandistic films and all that kind of stuff. But the narrative films that were going on, a lot of it, not just absolutely delusional.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just delusion that these people are engaged in some of this cinema here. And the names and the people who left and the people who replaced them, the German actresses and Swiss actors and Swedish actors who sort of became, replaced the
Garbo
the,
and
who
Dietrich.
came here. All very, very interesting. You know, I mean, you and I both students of cinema. A lot of stuff in this movie I didn't know. Yes, dry. But, you know, if you want to learn some stuff, put the movie in.
Hitler's Hollywood, the documentary is unrated. Lemley's Town Center in Encino, Lemley's Music Hall, Beverly Hills. Class Rank, a romantic comedy. Eric Stoltz directs. Benjamin August wrote the screenplay. Skylar Gisondo, Olivia Holt, and Kristen Chenoweth star. Lael?
This is a quirky and kind of endearing comedy, which is really notable mostly for the performances and the tone that director Eric Stoltz keeps the whole time. He does a really good job sort of keeping the reins on the tone. It's funny as heck. It features this kid, this teenage boy, who decides to run for the Board of Education because he has attended every single meeting of the Board of Education since he was, let's say, 8 years old, because that's just the kind of nerdy kid that he is. He believes that French should be outlawed in schools. And he's very driven, very motivated. He has a girlfriend in China that I don't think he's ever met, but he receives cassettes from, and they communicate back and forth by that. he gets into a sort of a challenge and a relationship with another girl, played by Olivia Holt, who is believes that she should be the number one ranked student at her school. She is, in fact, the number two ranked student. She decides to challenge the school board, the Board of Education, and outlaw the ranking of students. So it's sort of these teenagers arming themselves with their own grit and tenacity and fighting their way against the school board. It's got some very funny moments. Kristen Chenoweth has a very nice turn as the mom. It's kind of delightful.
I love the notion of Eric Stoltz, who's sort of the quintessential teen heartthrob in all those movies that he made 35 years ago and all that kind of stuff. I like the idea of
directing one of those.
Yeah. He's become, I think, quite a successful TV director doing Grey's Anatomy, Nashville, Glee, I think Madam Secretary as well. He's I didn't know he had done so much, but he's got a really very assured hand, especially with these younger actors. Does a really nice job.
Class Rank is the romantic comedy. Eric Stoltz directing. It's unrated. It's at Lemley's Monica Film Center in Santa Monica. The Guardians, a French drama that is rated R. Natalie Bay is the star of the film, along with Iris Bree, I should say. Tim, what'd you think of The Guardians?
Yeah. Natalie Bay, my crush on her, is 45 years old. Oh, my God. So this is really a very beautiful film set in the French countryside, 1915. World War One begins. This French farm family, they have three sons and a daughter. Natalie Bay has three sons and a daughter. The boys go off to the war, leaving her daughter, I think an old uncle there to take care of the farm, and she hires a woman who has been more or less orphaned. So it's basically these women running this farm. And a lot of the time we spend just watching them do this work, the work that it takes, the work that men would usually do, the wheat and all that kind of stuff, run this farm. It's just so beautiful. And they hear news back from the front, almost always devastating news. And we simply see what it took for the folks who didn't go to the war to make it through. There's a love story that happens when one of the sons comes back. It's really, really beautiful. Laura, who, of course, is Natalie Bay's daughter, actual daughter, plays her daughter in this film. And she's with Johnny Holiday, who passed away not too terribly long ago. So there's a whole lot of little French film aristocracy going on here. And it plays its way through the film. It's a beautiful movie. I really liked it quite a lot.
It's funny. I was going to bring up, when we talk about mothers in film, one of my favorites, Mrs. Miniver, set during World War II on the home front, a tremendous performance by Greer Garson, who won the Oscar. And anyway, we'll talk about that later, but talking about The Guardians, which does something, sounds like a bit similar with the Great War that preceded. The Guardians is the French film. It's rated R at Lemley's Royal Theater in West Los Angeles. Anything, a romantic drama, stars John Carroll Lynch and Matt Bomer, Maura Tierney in the cast. Timothy McNeil makes his feature directorial debut. He also wrote the screenplay. Lael?
So this is a really unexpected drama in which John Carroll Lynch is a widower who has just experienced the unexpected death of his wife in an accident. His sister, Maura Tierney, begs him to move out to California after a suicide attempt. He's in a very dark and sad place. He begins a friendship and a relationship with a transgender next-door neighbor, played by Matt Bomer. It's not clear whether he has any idea that Frida, the Matt Bomer character, is in fact transgender or not, but it's this lovely story of friendship and warmth and possible romance. It goes to unexpected places. I thought it was beautifully assured, surprising, and very kind of truthful. There's a few things about it that I thought could have been adjusted, but mostly very good.
Perhaps guiltily a bit. A bit of Flawless, a bit of The Crying Game. John Carroll Lynch playing this Mississippi? Is he from Mississippi?
Thanks.
And he's doing this accent just as beautifully as you would ever want to hear it done. The director, Timothy McNeil, he's from Texas, so he knows that language. Very good stuff.
Anything is at Lemley's Monica Film Center in Santa Monica. It's rated R. Also, hope you'll come see us June 2nd, Saturday night, 7 o'clock, Theater at Ace Hotel, downtown L.A., for our next Film Week screening series, The Graduate, on the big screen. I hope to see you there. We have much more to come on Film Week in a couple minutes.
No wire hangers! What's wire hangers doing in this closet when I told you no wire hangers ever! I work and work till I'm half dead, and I hear people saying she's getting old. What do I get? A daughter! Who cares as much about the beautiful dresses I give her as she cares about me? What's wire hangers doing in this closet?
Well, that's one kind of film, Mother, Faye Dunaway in Mommy Dearest. But I'd love to hear from you as a Film Week listener. If you're listening to the Friday Live 11 o'clock hour broadcast, what's your favorite depiction of a mother in film? As this Mother's Day weekend gives us an opportunity to talk about it. I mentioned earlier one of my favorites, Greer Garson. It's a truly heroic character that she plays, but heroic in just the ordinary coping with the daily stresses of her husband off fighting the war, dealing with the family at home, and as the front of the war moves ever closer. Yet she won the best Oscar for it. It is a tremendous performance, William Wyler directed film. But I'd love to hear from you your favorite or one of your favorite performances of the character of a mother on film. 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722. You can also on the Air Talk page, kpecc.org, place it there. JP says, my favorite mom pick is I Remember Mama. Growing up in a Norwegian-American church, I knew mothers just like the one that Irene Dunne played. Yeah, that's another favorite. 866-893-KPECC or the Air Talk page, kpecc.org. The most qualified of any of us in the studio is Lael because she's a mother of two. Lael, what's your favorite?
Well, hands down, I think the two movies about moms that most resonate with me would be one, Terms of Endearment with Shirley MacLaine and Deborah Winger. Just a terrific film. And then more recently, Lady Bird with Laurie Metcalf is just so, so good.
And she is. And the complexity of Metcalf.
Oh, yeah.
In that performance, she was my pick in that Best Supporting
Actress.
Yes,
she obviously didn't win, but it was such a nuanced performance. There is so much depth there that I hope people will go back and look at it again.
You mentioned Terms of Endearment, so let's hear from Terms of Endearment. This, of course, Shirley MacLaine, classic performance as Aurora Greenway, and she's struggling to come to terms with her daughter's illness and her daughter's medical care.
Excuse me. It is after 10. Give my daughter the pain shot, please.
Mrs. Greenway, I was going to.
Oh, good. Go ahead.
In just a few minutes.
Well, please, it's after 10. It's after 10. I don't see why she has to have this pain.
Ma'am, it's not my patient.
It's time for her shot. You understand? Do something! All she has to do is hold on until 10, and it's past 10. She's in pain. My daughter is in pain. Give her the shot. Do you understand?
You're going to behave.
Give my daughter the shot.
Thank you very much.
Shirley MacLaine. So, Lael.
I think I've channeled that energy a few times with my own kids in
dire situations.
The
ultimate parental advocate.
Absolutely. Yeah. I just so loved the relationship between Aurora and Emma in that movie. I thought that both of those actresses, who apparently Deborah Winger had a very feisty, fiery relationship off screen, but it really worked, I thought, as well. And yeah, I thought just so, so good.
Charles?
How about Katharine Hepburn in The Lion in Winter?
Mm. Oh, yeah.
That's a wonderful performance.
Great film, too.
Although one of the most moving maternal figures, I think, in recent films would be Ellie in Up, who wants so desperately to be a mother and who can't. And that's just a heartbreaking moment.
Mm. Mm. Hard to talk about Shirley in that film without also mentioning her in Postcards from the Edge.
Right.
Where she plays a different kind of mom. But nevertheless, a heck of a mom in that movie. For me personally, though, my moms tend to go a little bit more edgy. So I kind of dig Gina Rollins in Gloria.
Oh, yeah.
80. Not actually her kid, but, you know, she kind of adopts him.
She does, yeah.
And she'll shoot anybody who tries to take him away. I like that. And then I got to go straight to Sarah Connor, Terminator 2. You gotta love that mom who taught her son to be the warrior who will save the world. All from his mom. My mom did the same thing.
Did she do her own stunts?
Still does at 74. In Diary, I beat up Tyler Perry a lot on this show, but in Diary of a Mad Black Woman, he plays a mom. And that mom gives the most sage advice, named Tyler Perry dressed up as a mom. The advice that my grandmother gave me and my great-grandmother gave me, which, of course, his grandmother and great-grandmother gave him. So I still feel like that's motherly advice being passed down through the dude in the dress.
And still one of the great titles for a film.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Let's talk with Tom in Silver Lake. Tom, your favorite mom on film.
Hey, Larry. Good to hear from you. One of my favorite actresses that had some great motherly roles was Dorothy McGuire. I was thinking specifically of the film, another William Wilder film, Friendly Persuasion. She was the Quaker housewife of Gary Cooper. Did you ever see the film by chance, Friendly Persuasion?
No, I haven't seen it, but I'll check it out now.
But she was also the classic mom in Disney's Old Yeller.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I just thought as an actress, I don't know if I had a maternal movie star mom actress, would be Dorothy McGuire. She just, and I met her a few times in person, but just a real sweet, maternal, loving kind of lady.
All right. That's great. Tom, thanks so much. 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Let's see. Joe in Redondo Beach, your favorite maternal performance on film.
Hands down, greatest mom ever in movies, Debbie Reynolds in Albert Brooks' film, Mother.
Good choice. Good choice.
Let's hear an example. I'll come back to you in a minute, Joe. But here, you know, Albert Brooks temporarily moves back in with his mom while he's going through a divorce. And here, a family argument on the front lawn turns a bit awkward when a neighbor hosing her lawn overhears everything.
Oh, honey, don't leave like this. Really, it's nothing.
Come with me.
Then come with me. My God, it sounds like you're lovers.
We're lovers. You're the one that's living with her.
Well, I have some news for you. We are lovers.
That's a joke?
No, it isn't a joke. I didn't want to tell you earlier. I thought it would upset you.
No, God.
Why are you talking like this? Why would you even say something like that? It's disgusting.
Boys.
Why is it disgusting?
Because it is.
Don't you read history? It didn't start with me. I love my mother, and I love having sex with her.
Oh.
You ought to examine yourself that you can even make a joke like that.
Well, you ought to examine yourself that you take it so seriously.
Debbie Reynolds. Joe, I'll go back to Joe in Redondo Beach. She was so good in that role.
Hysterically funny and so right on with bits about the protective layer of frost.
On the ice cream. Wow. I love that.
The giant wheel of cheese and then get her face on the video phone was well ahead of the times that we are now watching our grandparents try to use FaceTime.
Hey, Joe, thanks. That's great. One of my favorites, too. So glad. Jim in Claremont mentions another one that I love. Angela Lansbury in The Manchurian Candidate.
She's good in that. In fact, I
asked her about that performance, and she said, to paraphrase her, that she just thought that was one of the greatest opportunities to get to play that character and what that script gave her in that film. And boy, does she deliver an incredible performance.
She's actually younger than Tierney in that movie. I mean, she's actually younger than him playing his mother in that movie.
Then she went on to do Mrs. Potts.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, with a very heartwarming performance there. All right, we have so many other listeners who want to weigh in and share their favorite mom performances on Film Week. We'll hear from them momentarily, but I do want to remind you, we'd love to have you join us to see another mom on film. That's right, Anne Bancroft, Mrs. Robinson.
Oh.
We're showing The Graduate on the big screen, the theater at Ace Hotel, downtown Los Angeles, coming up real fast. Reserve seats are available June 2nd, 7 p.m., Theater at Ace Hotel. We'll watch The Graduate together on the big screen. I've never seen it that way. And then I'll be hosting a conversation about the movie afterward. And Lawrence Terman, one of the producers of The Graduate, will be joining me on stage. We'll be talking about that, and get tickets, kpcc.org/in-person. For this Mother's Day weekend, we're talking about your favorite moms on film. For those listening to our live Film Week broadcast Friday in the 11 o'clock hour, we have phones open for you at 866-893-KPCC. But you're not shut out if you're listening Saturday at noon, because you can go to our KPCC Film Week segment page and you can post your favorite mom performance and engage in the online conversation with your fellow Film Week listeners. Rebecca in Culver City called to tout Barbara Barry's performance as the mother in Breaking Away. Her son.
Oh, that was such a good movie.
Yeah, so
He wants to be a champion bicyclist. She's exasperated, but she's not bitter. A brilliant performance, Rebecca says.
You can tell she loves him even when he's trying to be Italian.
Mm-hmm. All right.
A lot of movie stars came out of that movie.
John in Pasadena, your favorite mom role.
I have two with Viola Davis. One is Fences and one is Doubt. And then Cecily Tyson in Sounder.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's an iconic performance.
I'm gonna go ahead and add Viola Abilene Clark in The Help. She plays Abilene Clark in Help, and she's a wonderful mother there, so we can toss her in another Viola performance.
Yeah, and she does that thing where it's multi-layered, it's complex.
And the thing of it is, she's everybody's mother in that movie.
Who's the mother in Fruitvale Station?
Oh, that's the other character, the other actress from Olivia Spencer.
Octavia Spencer.
Yeah, she's so good in that.
Wonderful.
Yeah, John, excellent. Thank you so much. Vicky in Monrovia, your favorite film mom?
Toni Collette in The Sixth Sense.
Yeah. Because she's trying to figure out what's going on with her boy.
Very protective
And you just feel, you know, I had small children when I saw that, and I said, if something, I want to be like that mother. Mm-hmm. Just hangs in there no matter what.
All right, Vicky, thanks. We have Autumn, who said Diane Keaton in The Family Stone, an epic matriarch, very underrated holiday movie, hilariously sharp-tongued, fiercely protective of her family while facing her own devastating mortality. Autumn, thank you for that suggestion. Let's see, Vinny in Pasadena, your pick.
Well, that would be Katharine Hepburn in Long Day's Journey Into Night. Her performance cuts right to your heart.
All right, Vinny, thank you. 866-893-KPECC. Peter in Glendale. Peter, your favorite film mom?
Jackie Weaver in Animal Kingdom. She's the mother of a crew of very bad men, but she loves her boys, and she will do anything to protect them.
One of those itchy moms.
And didn't she win the Best Supporting Actress
She was
Oscar,
nominated.
Or nominated, okay. Mm-hmm. All right, yeah, Jackie Weaver, the Australian actress. Peter, thanks so much.
Can I toss in Sally Field and Forrest Gump?
Oh, yeah.
Because life is a box of chocolates.
Unfortunately, too many of them are coconut. Also, more recently, who is the actress in Love, Simon, who's the mother, who has the scene with him about now you get to exhale?
Mary will look that up for us and see who that is.
She was very good in that, and apparently that scene had the whole crew in tears.
All right, Jennifer Garner.
Jennifer Garner.
Yeah.
Boy, you're fast, Mary. That was good. Mary Knopf, our Film Week, had it there as I was speaking the words.
Olympia Dukakis in Steel Magnolias. That's another one of those Southern moms. And I love my Southern moms. She plays Ma Lin in that movie. Again, wisdom, sage advice all the time.
In Moonstruck.
Yeah.
Yep.
Hey, Lisa in Huntington Beach, you wanted to mention Steel Magnolias, but another performance.
That's right. I have to enter Sally Field one more time for her. Mm-hmm. She is just the most devoted mom. And I mean, she just drives you to tears when you see her at the graveside yelling at Shirley MacLaine and Olympia Dukakis. And it's just devastating and beautiful, beautiful, beautiful devotion.
All right. Thanks so much, Lisa. We appreciate it. Let's listen to another selection. This from the Joy Luck Club, an adaptation of Amy Tan's best-selling novel, Four Mothers, Four Daughters, reflecting on their lives in a multi-generational Chinese family. In this scene, a mother played by Lisa Liu explains to her daughter played by Rosalind Chow the difficult nature of motherhood.
Mom, what does it mean? What does it mean, Mommy?
I tell you the story because I was raised the Chinese way. I was taught to desire nothing, to swallow other people's misery, and to eat my own bitterness. And even though I taught my daughter the opposite, but still, she came out the same way. Maybe it is because she was born to me and she was born a girl. And I was born to my mother and I was born a girl. All of us like stairs. One step after another. Going up, going down, but always going the same way.
From the Joy Luck Club, we're talking about the best moms on film. Scott, in Mid-City, L.A., your pick.
Madame Constantine and Alfred Hitchcock's Notorious. She's Claude Rains' domineering mother.
Mm.
All right, Scott, thanks. Madame Constantine. Michael in Porter Ranch. Michael, you there?
Yes, Ellen Burstyn in The Exorcist.
Ellen Burstyn. Oh, I think she also was nominated, I believe, for that.
She won for Alice Doesn't Live Here anymore.
Okay.
She may have been nominated for
that. Yeah, which was a great performance, by the way, in Alice.
Mom in,
she really drives her daughter crazy in that movie, and I just love it. She balances things out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, Michael.
In that Darren Aronofsky film where she's addicted to the... she plays a heck of a mom in that, too.
Yep.
Yeah. Hmm.
All right. Jeffrey in Beverly Hills, your pick.
Yes, Irene Dunne in I Remember Mama, 1948, directed by George Stevens. She heads a Norwegian immigrant family in San Francisco in the early 1900s and is the model of maternal generosity, unselfishness, empathy, open-mindedness, self-effacement, which should become the focus of life lessons for the family. And it was based on a book, Mama's Bank Account, referring to a recurring statement by Mama, good, we don't have to go to the bank, delivered after each weekly family gathering around the dinner table in which she apportions the father's earnings for various domestic needs. And actually, there is no such account. She invokes it only to spare her children any unnecessary worry about not having enough money.
Wow, Jeffrey, thank you. Ooh. So well said. Mm. Irene Dunne, I Remember Mama. And Will, in Long Beach, we're almost out of time, but quickly, your pick, best mom.
I have to go with Auntie Mame for those of us.
Rosalind Russell. Yeah, terrific performance. And what
could
is
be more wholesome?
She wasn't really a mom; she was a guardian. But real quickly, why Rosalind Russell is Auntie Mame?
Well, she learns how to become a mother. You know, she adopts her nephew as her ward, and you know, just seeing that journey of her being this New York socialite in the 20s, and then you know, learning how to love a child, you know, teaching him how to make martinis is just so funny.
Why did I ever buy him those damned long pants?
Very good, Charles. Hey, Will, thank you so much. Appreciate it. And Rosie says her favorite stepmom, Maria, from The Sound of Music. Julie Andrews'
nice
performance,
choice.
Of course. Although that's a spoiler. If you haven't seen the film, you wouldn't watch that. All right. For our Film Week critics, I'm Larry Mantle. Thank you so much for joining us. And again, we sure hope to see you Saturday night, June 2nd, 7 o'clock, Theater at Ace Hotel for our next film screening. It's The Graduate on the big screen at the Ace, 7 o'clock with a post-film conversation. We hope you join us for that. Reserve seats are available. Visit kpcc.org/in-person. And of course, have a wonderful Mother's Day weekend. Hope you have a great chance, if your mom is still with you and around, a good chance to spend some time or at least talk with her.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.